Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk. Now, just before we hit record here, we were talking about the fragile nature of your USB headset.
What's like? Well, you know, this is a problem with wired, and this is why Wi-Fi and, you know, wireless is certainly superior, is I'm using a headset that is a USB plugged in to the USB port. And inevitably, with the long cord, I didn't see it and tripped over it and yanked off the back of the USB plug casing. And so now I've got a loose wire, and it's a lot more fragile, let's put it that way. The strength has been reduced greatly on the plug, but it works.
Yeah. So, well, didn't you read the manual that you're not supposed to exert more than 10 foot-pounds of yank force on this thing at any one time? Come on. You got to pay attention to this stuff. There are limits to what our components can do.
Classified as customer abuse, and it definitely was not the fault of the design of the plug.
Well, so, you know, I disagree there right off the bat. That is the way, I mean, we use products that have cords and they present trip hazards, which is a safety thing in and of itself. And in some places, like if you go to a hotel, they're out there with all kinds of tape, putting all this stuff down, or mats, hiding and burying all these cables.
Sure.
Right? Right. And so they're accommodating the design, and they have the flexibility to do it. Now, your system, just like mine, has a cable to it, and mine has a quick release, right? So that if it gets yanked on or gets too much for the strain relief, it'll disconnect in a way that you just plug it back in and it works. The USB one, if you hit it at the wrong angle, right, it's now jammed in the socket and it'll destroy the wires.
Right. And part of the problem with this, right, well, this is actually a combination of how this chassis is built, and I won't mention the computer company's name or whatever, but in this case, USB plugs are all behind the top panel, sort of, and facing backwards. Instead of facing out the front of the computer face, they're actually plugging in a reverse from behind in the top back.
Oh, and then you lose a couple inches or a foot or so of cable, and it's a U-turn
and
right
it's
off.
In the wrong, right. If it was in the front and in the face of the computer where directly pulling out parallel to the ground, or a straight back motion would have, if when I tripped on that cable, is more likely it would have been pulled straight out of the USB plug. Instead, where it is now, it's facing the opposite direction, so it really can't come out, which could be good in certain situations where you don't want a USB cable to be disconnected easily.
Right.
But in this case, you know, the fact that it was in a reverse mode and it couldn't come back out with the force that I was exerting on the cable caused the plastic housing to break on the plug.
Mm-hmm.
Still, you know, it works.
Yeah, duct tape.
I'm using it right now, duct tape.
Duct tape.
You know.
A little baling wire, some chewing gum, you'd be fine.
Yeah, you know, I could use my wireless headset too, but I think the quality is always better when you're wired.
Yeah, you lose a little bit on the wireless stuff. Now, you've seen that chart. It floats around. I think it's way back from the old fax days and probably even prior to that, where, you know, how do you fix anything? You know, if it's moving and it's not supposed to, duct tape. And if it's not moving and it's supposed to, WD-40.
That's it. WD-40 and duct tape, you can fix anything. We were going to talk about a little bit about the component temperature specifications, and you and I have had experience, I think, where when we've presented a halt test plan or a strategy, somebody said, well, you can't take it above this temperature because this component specified to only work at 40C.
Yeah, yeah, it was. And I think there was a little bit, this was a question that came in the other day, and I think it was from one of our listeners. It came in through my email, and I, they're saying that we're putting together a halt plan, and one of my designers said, well, you can't go above 40C because that's the limit of this component. It's right here on the data sheet. Don't run it above this temperature. And I was like, you know, I wasn't sure how to respond to that. Is that right. A confusion about what halt is about, or is that a misunderstanding what the operating limit values on data sheets are, or is there really a technical, you know, don't go above this because it's just going to melt? Maybe that was the upper. Now, they were talking about electronics and the solid state piece of equipment. I'm like, no, that 40C is not, that's probably not all that terribly useful. And I advise them, my immediate answer was, yeah, you can go above that. But I think it's worth discussing because there's lots of ways you can respond to a question like that.
Right.
Like, what do you do with it? And I know you talked about back in your Dell days, you'd take a computer and put it at a high temperature and just run it. And it was well beyond its specifications. And it did fine.
Yeah, we had thousands of hours at 65C where all the components were running many of them were running above spec. And certainly the hard drive, power supplies, everything were running above spec, but below the thermal trip, built-in thermal design trip. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the question is, looking back at the history of why and how those specifications on components are made. And they're not necessarily as I think there's a great article by Michael Pecht on data sheets and data and how specs are set on components. And a lot of it, at times, it has very little to do with the physical capabilities of the actual product of the component. It's by the market, what the market demands.
Well, I had one vendor tell me that I asked them why they set their specs the way they do. And he says, all of our competitors have the same specs. Exactly. So we want to be in that market. So we don't do any testing or evaluation. We just do what everybody else does.
And it's really unfortunate. Sometimes that prevents them from selling to markets. I've seen companies have to not bid on contracts because they're computer systems were marked at 35C, and in India they don't always have air conditioning, and it can be well above 35C in their offices. And so, if your maximum operating spec, now the funny thing, I wonder if those companies would buy is, you know, we talked about in the past, iPhone 4 was spec'd at 35C actual maximum operating conditions. Now, the body temperature is 35C or 37C, so that was kind of an obvious why would they do that? But it was kind of, sometimes I think specs are just a legal safety escape sometimes.
Yeah, deniability or deniability. Whatever. Now, when it's done well, right, when the a designer comes to you and says, no, you really don't want to go over there. Now, my general approach to that is, well, let's see. Right. What failure do you expect to occur? Right. And if it's not going to explode and kill everybody in the room, well, let's go to 40C. Let's go to 45C. Let's go to 50C. Mm-hmm. What is it exactly you expect to occur? Is it going to melt? Exactly. Is it going to stop working? Is it going to, you know, turn blue? What? And when I set up a halt test, that you go through, well, we're going to step out on temperature and humidity and all these other stresses that may be appropriate for what we're trying to do. And the question I ask is, well, what do you expect? What do you think is going to happen when what's going to fail first? Right. What's going to fail second?
What do you feel is the failure mechanism in this component? It is the weakness that'll be damaged or hurt or won't function at 40C plus.
Right.
And of course, you know, if it's a surface mount component, it has to go up to 200C to be resought, to be reflowed onto the board.
For a few seconds. It's not going to be there for 1,000 hours.
And that's right. And that's what you know, the design engineer was like, well, that's just for a few seconds, not powered on. Well, I said, no, it's probably not going to operate at 200C, but physically there's nothing in the component or package or wire bonds or anything else about it's going to be damaged. Now, what it, you know, I, that's kind
the
of
parametrics
what
might change the its timing and other. No, I
so
I mean,
you talked about soft skills. This is maybe where you'd have to use, you know, some soft skills. And
that's right. So when one of the things that I usually start with is, well, what are the obvious things that are going to fail, right? And remember, what we're trying to do is make sure our product can go to the technological limits of the materials and design, right? All the way out. And so I had a product years ago that had an LCD screen on it, a little screen. And they were struggling with what would happen if we go cold? What would happen? Mm-hmm. And their biggest thing they came up with was, well, this is used outdoors and people have gloves on, so our capacitive touchscreen won't work through the gloves.
Right.
Yeah, probably not. you don't want to freeze a person's finger to the frame of your equipment, you know, kind of thing.
No, and you probably couldn't use one of those little pens with the capacitive.
No, it's you need the big deal. And so I said, but what's more likely to occur is that the LCD screen itself will go dark.
Right.
At low temperatures. It just isn't technically capable to display. Right. And it just goes dark. And when you warm it back up, it comes right back and all is happy. I think you got to worry about condensation more than you got to worry about the cold.
Right.
But if you have to work at minus 40, you better do some other technology or whatever. So I said, that's what I mean. What do you expect to work? What's physically, technically going to happen? Or from your engineering judgment and experience, what do you think is going to happen? And so we kind of bounded all of our stresses by, well, what do we expect? Now, I do that so that we are making sure that we have the monitoring capability to even see that phenomena occurring.
Had transmitted outside the chamber or conduct,
you can
view
it, or it's electrically sensing,
so you know,
or whatever.
What the system is doing, because we know, these limitations are not the limitations of the solid state electronics, the rest of it, like batteries, things like that. We know there's some limitations to those functions inherently, intrinsically in the technology.
Right.
And that's what call the fundamental limit of technology. So,
That's the question: is when a designer pushes back on your plan and goes, "Well, you can't go above 40C." Well, is that a technological limit? And then you go, "Well, where are we using this product? Right? If we're going to use this in a sauna, we might need to go above 40C." So let's think about this a little bit. And then
with 80% humidity,
90%. That's right. Yeah, or 100%. Something is dripping, but the idea is that
you can't expect it to be waterproof.
No, but the first question is that why that number? Why 40C is your limit for that technology? Is there some physical, chemical manifestation at that temperature that just destroys it? And if we know that it destroys it, you're right. We don't need to go beyond that. But if it's just on the data sheet as an operating limit, is that a performance thing? Does that mean it loses its timing or it doesn't have the same resistance anymore or whatever it is? Is there a function there that we need to be aware of, you know, and or is it just a data sheet with no relevance whatsoever?
If it is a performance function, is that going to affect how it's being applied in your design? I mean, that's really the issue. And does it have the ability? Because, again, component, you're going to get variation lot to lot, production variations.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really that close to the spec, I mean, if it was spec'd at 40 degrees and you found that it started messing up at 45, you ought to be worried. You know, even 50, I'd say you ought to be worried. Unless you've tested 1,000 and all of them, you know, have that 50-degree...
Have that 10-degree margin.
50, yeah, at least. But even that, I would be worried because of the end-use conditions. So that's one thing that I don't believe that is really considered, is the fact that you are going to have some variation.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you have a second source component. You know, the other guy, he's going to have the same specs on his same device. Say you have a Wi-Fi chip. or something like that. That's right. You know, another you use
same form, fit, and function. Same you always hear
form,
that.
Fit, function, right? And he specs it the same because that's what the market says. You know, this is 30, 40 degrees C. There's no reason to go beyond that, and we'll just stay safe with that. But mm-hmm. it's very likely that they have significantly different margins, and you know that's another reason. Encourage people to use different mixes of suppliers if they're going to have multiple suppliers for a component.
Well, that comes, I think that's appropriate. You're not going to do it. If you have a 500 components on your system,
right.
you're not going to do every variation three vendors for every one of them. Pick right. the ones that have the least margin or highest risk. Yeah.
Right. And in the way, in this course, step stress is the way to find it, mm-hmm. is find that weak link. So again, this is, but for those engineers that, you know, say, oh man, I don't know, you know, it's 40 rated at 40 C. And if you get their kind of permission, or you just go to, oh, we already did that test. And that's it right. ran to
80 C.
Yeah, ran to 80 C. 85 or 100.
Yeah, and the hard drive had a problem or whatever. Yeah. Right.
And then, you know, that's kind of that's another. Strategy that I've used and said, hey, it's fine. Why were you worried? What were you worried about? And we did three and it didn't have any problem. We didn't destroy it. It didn't work after that. I mean, didn't work beyond that temperature. But when we brought it down to cool, it worked fine, just like it had mm-hmm. originally. So, you know, again, proving that.
Well, you know, part of the hesitation, what I hear from designers that bring that argument forward, saying, well, it's not rated for that, is yeah. they don't want to redesign it. You know, that, right. that opens right. Pandora's box for right. them. Now right. they got to do all this work again and all this analysis and layout and retest it.
They think all that. They think that. They well, think in fear of redesign to make it adaptable to an environment it'll never see or something like that.
Right.
And that's not true at all, Fred. I mean, I know that.
I know.
It's one component. And it might be the same size component. It may be exactly the same shape, just a higher wattage.
Well, I mean, that's only one.
Wattage diode.
But that's only one scenario, right? I think there's three right. scenarios that come out of what we do in stressing products to failure. Is one is it fails at 30 C, and now we don't have a product that will work for 25% of our market.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
We got to really fix that. And there's usually no argument, right, yeah. there.
Right.
Right. But if they've only done bench testing and it's only right. on the lab or on the simulator, mm-hmm. That is invaluable information. Can we even get it to work over the range we know it has to work in? That's terribly useful. The other part, it gets into more of a trade-off balance, right? It fails, like you were saying, at 50 C, and we have a market expectation of 40 C for whatever right. good or bad reason. And we can right. make the argument that that's not a lot of margin, and here's why. Here's the variability of the use cases. Here's the variability of the components. And we'll get some pushback with supplier or with our design teams of, mm-hmm. is that worth changing in maybe next iteration? Or I have limits and trade-offs or whatever. And then that becomes a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But then you run the product, and it goes to the limit of the chamber. I've run electronics up to 200 C. You know, mm-hmm. we're just below the melt point of the solder.
Right, right.
And it's working fine. Right. And they go, well, it wasn't supposed to work that high. And it says, well, exactly. it does. It's got plenty of margin. That's good. Don't change it.
Right? Yeah.
I also tell them, right. don't tell marketing that we can run at those temperatures.
Exactly. Nobody right? needs to know that.
Nobody needs to know that. You guys go to
nobody you pick should know design. That, especially marketing.
Especially marketing. But I think that there's those three scenarios that occur in by halt is about not having, it's finding those limits.
Right.
It's not preconceived right. setting them. Now, right.
once you find them, then you decide what you do with them.
That's right. But I have found that the only exception to that is when you have a known safety issue, right? You know right. that this thing's just going to be spewing molten plasma all over the room. We'll probably not do that one, right?
No.
If we
no.
already know that, we don't need to redo that in the lab.
No, it's, that's right.
Chambers are expensive. Let's save that one for another day.
Right. I definitely wouldn't do some of the systems I worked in semiconductor manufacturing, because they had all kinds of terrible poisons in them, gas, boron trifluoride, arsenic, and things like that for an ion implanter. But there'll be sections of it I think that would benefit. That would be an interesting one to do, is some of the semiconductor equipment.
It's
rather incredibly complex.
And incredibly expensive, too.
Incredibly expensive, too, yes.
But it's also full of exotic materials, right? So to be able to handle those kinds of things, there's some pretty exotic technology in there and material sets. So it's, it'd be fun.
Incredible precision also now.
Yeah.
I haven't been in the semiconductor industry for 20 years, and of course it's amazing. And of course they've gotten humans out of the production process flow, where we used to walk around in clean rooms. I think now everything is enclosed in its own channels and tunnels, and humans can walk around normally.
That's right.
Not in body suits anymore.
That's right.
Except in the spacecraft industry.
In the advertising world. They still like to show the bunny suits. You're really doing electronics. Well, anyway, I don't know if we answered the question completely. I gave him my answer, and I think our discussion illustrated a couple other ways to approach this. But it's really a series of questions and laying out what the expectations are, I think, as we agree on that. So
Your fundamental statement is what do you think is going to cause this to fail? And and if you ask, certainly I've been familiar, and I think you have too, with cross-sectioning things, chip assemblies or semiconductor devices are now packaged and contained. Mm-hmm. And so, hopefully the engineer you're working with knows a little bit about that too, and knows a little bit about materials and the fact that, again, our components today, especially now that they're all in lead-free assemblies, have to be even higher than the 183 leaded components, lead solder. They actually have to run now or be able to maybe even repeated cycles of over 200, 210 degrees centigrade to get reflowed. Yep. And I think they're capable of taking that a few times before anything would be damaged. So that's the kind of thing you hope that those engineers that have objections, or you'd explain it to them. And and then the next test is just show them.
That's right.
And, it's not going to, and they may be just amazed and really impressed. And you may not have any problem with the assembly.
That's probably a subject for you get the high temperatures. Then becomes some smart manager comes along and says, "Oh, we over designed it. Do that again.
Can we take some money out of that?
Can we get take some the margin out of that?" Is the way I phrase it. Yeah. Let's think about that, you guys.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, that, we'll save that for another one. But for the listeners, if you've run into this this pushback on setting up a test running out to margins and to finding failures, how did you handle it? What's worked for you? And we'd like to hear from you and what's worked or what questions you have that may well make a nice follow-on episode for this. And thanks for the person that sent me the question. It's kind of sparked a nice little discussion, something we hadn't talked about before. I think we've been close to this, Kirk, but not on this particular question. So
I think we've brushed against it. So, thanks for listening, everybody. And please send us your feedback. We'd love to get new questions. And we'll certainly, the hot topic for what you're dealing with maybe in your company right now and test and reliability questions are perfect for us.
Yep, definitely are. All right. Well, thanks so much, Kirk. We'll talk to you again later.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Okay, take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.